Welcome one and all to The Fix here on KXRW. I'm Bill Haas. So very happy to have you here. The song you are grooving on right now is called Angels Crossing, and the man at the piano is internationally renowned American smooth jazz and jazz fusion pianist, keyboardist, drummer, vocalist, composer, prolific recording artist with over 30 albums to his credit, Portland, Oregon's own Tom Grant. I've been admiring his music for years now, and I was thrilled to have the chance to talk with him about his life and music. Let's listen to that conversation. Tom, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
My pleasure.
And I'm hoping to catch up a little bit on your musical experiences. So, well, you come from a musical family, if I'm to understand it. That your father was a tap dancer and that he also owned a record store?
Let's see. My dad had a couple of different locations. The first one that I was aware of was on North Williams Avenue and Broadway, at the corner of Broadway and Williams, which was a neighborhood at that time. It hadn't, you know, there was no freeway running through there. And it was just a nice little neighborhood. And I used to come down there with my dad on, well, a lot of times it was Sundays, but it could be any day of the week, and there'd be people in there dancing, you know, listening to music and dancing. It was sort
Did
of
he
a
have
party
an area
atmosphere.
Out there for that? Did he actually have a little floor space? They were just dancing.
No, they were just dancing in the store. They, you know, listen, and there were no listening booths as such. So it was quite something. I just thought that was that's what a record store was, you know. So after a few years at that location, then he moved downtown to Southwest Broadway, just right in the heart of downtown Portland. And he had listening booths, and there was no shrink wrap in those days. So my brother and I would just choose whatever records we wanted. We would take them home, play them, put them back in the jackets, and take them back to the store to be sold. that was just the way at that time. Like I say, there was no shrink wrap, and
right.
And my dad didn't care. My dad was interested in us exposing ourselves to as much music as possible. I don't know. We listened to, like, I gravitated toward people like Errol Garner, who was like a great piano player in in the 40s, 50s, and beyond. And I loved his style. So I often refer to him as my first piano teacher, even though the only teaching I got was just listening and learning from Errol Garner.
So just breaking it down.
I mean, I had to kind of figure things out for myself, and that's the way a lot of people, maybe not so much nowadays. Nowadays, there's such an emphasis on go to school to learn jazz, you know, go to this school. Portland State's got a great jazz program headed by, we laughingly refer to each other as cousins, but we're not cousins at all. Daryl Grant is the head of the jazz program at Portland State. But, you know, nowadays, jazz education is a thing. Well, it wasn't when I was a kid. The jazz education that I received was from listening to records, copying stuff, if I could, off of records, and going to see people live when I could. And my dad's store was kind of a haven for visiting performers. They would stop by, and my dad had a radio show from his from the store.
Is that right?
And so, he had Charlie Parker on the show at one time. I didn't meet Charlie. I think this was maybe even shortly after I was born. So I didn't know from Charlie Parker or nobody at that time, but But then I got sidelined, and I used to listen to what's this guy's name? I think it was Kermit Schaefer, who had a series of albums called Pardon My Blooper. And Pardon My Blooper was a series of mistakes, and sometimes they were, you know, raunchy mistakes that, that people would make on the radio. And
I think I remember some of those.
Yeah. There were a lot of the mistakes were classics. We won't go into them now on your show, but so I got sidelined by things like that, comedy stuff, Mort Saul, what's his name, Newhart. I can't remember.
Sure, Bob Newhart, with the button down mind. Newhart,
yeah.
Sure, Mort Saul, brilliant.
Yeah, Mort Saul. Yeah. There we go. My mom would take me to see. She took me to a Lenny Bruce concert. I mean, you know, it was a concert just of him doing his monologues and stuff. But I know, wow is right. I mean, I wish I could ask my mom, what the heck were you thinking? You know, but I had his records, and I thought he was very funny. He was nasty, you know, and totally inappropriate for a. Let's see, how old was I? I was probably about 12 years old when we went to see Lenny
Bruce.
That's
amazing.
I know. I love that. You know, I love to tell that story. I mean, I don't know if she knew what the material was all about or what. And at that time, I don't know if you remember Jazz at the Philharmonic, Jazz at the Phil, that we called it.
I don't.
It was the... Yeah, it was Norman Granz was the guy that produced these shows, and all the great jazz people of the time, you know, would travel around the countryside, you know, and do shows. And it was people like I'm sure Louis Armstrong, singers. I can't think of names right now, but people that were popular, jazz performers that were popular. In the 40s and 50s. Well, I think when I was going, it was definitely in the 50s, maybe in the mid 50s. So, that was Jazz at the Phil. God, I wish I could think of some of the people that came. Oh, Gene Krupa some of the drummers, because I was really into playing drums too at that time. I wanted to be a drummer. Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, all those guys would.
Sure.
And as you and I are talking right now, I'm looking at one of my favorite photos of my mom and dad. They are flanking Johnny Mathis. Johnny Mathis had the big hit of Misty, and Misty was written by Errol Garner, my fave. And so, anyway, this photo has my mom and dad, Johnny Mathis, and some guy with a KWJJ briefcase he's holding. So, in other words. It was the radio guy, the record store guys, and Johnny Mathis.
And
anyway,
Johnny.
my favorite photo. Yeah.
So, which did you begin first, the piano or the drums?
Actually, I believe. Well, it was close to the same time, but I think it was the drums. I was more interested in the drums and tap dancing. You know, I just kind of faked it. I was only 4 years old, but my dad, he had me doing all of that. We had a little kid, kind of a kid's drum set, but it was real. I mean, it had a snare drum with snares on the bottom and kick drum, and we had some cymbals. But I think with all the racket that caused in the house, they started steering me toward the piano. And my dad taught me how to play a real simple song. Geez, if I was close to the piano, I'd play it for him. But the way I played it back then, it was a song called Dinah. And Dinah, In the state of Carolina. Yeah, that one. So that was my first song ever. And the reason was because I could play most of it, not all of it, on the black keys. And as a four-year-old, it was just easier to see and navigate through the black keys. And yeah, that's the first song I ever played on the piano.
Well, I was wondering with the, you know, the way the tap might have translated itself into your sense of timing, or should I say your heightened sense of time. This was, did everyone in your family have the beat? Did everyone tap dance?
My brother didn't get interested in it, but he did play the piano, and he was one of my main influences as far as wanting to play. And we had the piano in the house. It was a little Bennett. Nowadays, we call them verticals, but in those days, we called it a spinet. It was an Everett. And the three of us used to not fight over it, but we would, you know, we all wanted to play the piano. We all wanted to get our time in playing the piano. So my dad played by ear, totally. Played kind of in the tradition of like Fats Waller. And,
with the
and
stride.
My mom was a singer. Yeah, the stride piano, exactly. And my mom sang. So sometimes my dad would play a song and my mom would be in the kitchen doing the dishes or something like that and singing the song. That's how I got attached to certain songs. That was early life.
We have a couple of mutual friends. One, one of my favorite people, who is Margie Boulay. And she had mentioned, was it AM Northwest? If I misspeak again, I will correct it. But
no, that's the show. That's the show. Yeah.
And were you performing on that as well, or did you make appearances?
Oh yeah,
on
I used
that?
To. I used to, not only did I make appearances on the show with Margie and Jim. I was on the show playing the piano, but also, one of my songs from my first successful album was my third, and it was just called Tom Grant, and it had that image of the jazz cat on the cover.
Jazz cat swag.
And there you go. That image of the jazz cat is on T-shirts and posters and whatnot, and you can order them off my website. Sorry to be so... rank yeah and but the song from that album, I'd had two albums before it, and they pretty much did nothing as far as getting any kind of radio airplay, but this third one got a lot, and AM Northwest chose to take the song entitled The Morning Show and used it for their theme song for, I don't know, three, four, five years. It seemed like an inordinately long time. Every time I would turn that on, there they go. There's my song. Oh my God, aren't they going to get sick of this? But it worked pretty good. It got a lot of airplay, which was, the goal that I set out with. But the big bonus was that it was the theme on that show for all those years. And so I felt very lucky.
So you didn't write it and say, hey, they found it and then.
No, but
it
you know what? I did say in interviews leading up to when they started using it, I said, I just want to write one song that could be a candidate for being the theme of a morning, one of those kind of morning variety shows on TV. And sure enough, that's what happened. Somebody took my advice, and I don't know who, but they used that for a long time. I thank them profusely.
Mm. let's listen to The Morning Show and take the time to acknowledge a couple of our KXRW sponsors. We will be back to talk with Tom Grant right after this.
A big thank you to Vancouver's own Kiggins Theatre for supporting our radio community. Our historic Kiggins Theatre has a long tradition of showing movies for our community, 85 years. Kiggins currently features first-run big studio and art house films along with classic movie revival. Check out their live events, and you can even book the theatre for a private party or public event. Go to KigginsTheatre.com to see how you can rediscover the joy of going out for movie night again. Showtimes, booking information, and more at KigginsTheatre.com.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road, off of Patton Parkway, next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is located in the Heights Shopping Center. Customers 21 years of age and over can order online or in person. Both locations are open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Welcome back to The Fix on KXRW. Let's return to my conversation with Tom Grant. Well, who were some of your early influences, the people that you loved to listen to and you learned from? And it doesn't even need to be piano players.
Okay, and it isn't necessarily, but I'm going to include those. I already mentioned Errol Garner. That was like my first big influence. Then I discovered Ron Steen turned me on to Chick Corea. I knew he existed, but he turned me on to those early Return to Forever records that sure. Chick Corea did I don't know if it was his wife. There was a Brazilian singer. Can't remember her name right now, but so Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock for sure. But Chick and Herbie were the main ones. And, you know, I'd go see them when they came into town. And actually, they saw me play too. Well, Chick and I played together on a stage in the south of France when I was touring with the drummer Tony Williams. So I played a set with Chick. And that all came about because Chick was using a bass player named Bunny Brunel. Bunny was touring with us with the Tony Williams band. So that's how that came about. Herbie Hancock came to watch me play with Tony Williams. So I met Herbie and he had some helpful, constructive things to say about my playing.
That had to be heady stuff.
Yeah, that was, of course. You know, being that those guys were, those were at the top of my list. I couldn't believe that I was meeting them, let alone playing for and with like Chick and
I can't imagine.
Herbie was.
That had to be mind blowing.
Yeah, it was totally. But one time, let's see, I was, Ron Steen and I had a gig with Joe Henderson for a few years, and we did some touring around. And Joe was a tenor saxophonist, and he would be a perennial winner of the Downbeat Man of the Year, a Downbeat Saxophone Guy of the Year, or something like that. He won all the awards in Downbeat. He was a great saxophone player. And so we were playing at a club owned by the guy that opened the Lighthouse. And we might have actually played the Lighthouse when this happened. Oh, and I was able to meet one of my favorite piano players too, because he was there. Horace Silver was one of my other faves. My brother loved Horace Silver. There are great players out there, and I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but I probably am, because there's a lot of really
there are
great
so
piano
many.
Players.
Sure.
Yes.
Joe Sample. I don't know why he comes to mind, but these, you know.
Joe Sample came to, where did I see him? He came to one of my gigs at a place called Cousins Cafe, which is where I had been playing for years, but I really got my career going at Cousins Cafe. He came in there one night and I had him sit in. I can't remember what he played, but sounded like Joe Sample. There was a guy sitting in the audience. I swear to God, I thought, "Oh my God, that's Keith Jarrett. He's here, and I'm just fumbling around on the piano, and he's gonna be watching me." Long story short is, this guy had just copped the look of Keith Jarrett, kind of a fakey afro, and just the clothes he was wearing and everything about his face and clothing. And I thought, oh my God, that's him. Keith Jarrett was another favorite. I never met Keith. Hmm. It turns out that the guy in the audience was not. He was just a pretend Keith Jarrett. Probably wanted to spook me, and he succeeded at it.
That's a fine thing. Yeah, but go out and poor, frighten him.
Yeah, frighten that piano player. Poor Keith. He doesn't play anymore because he had a stroke. That's sad. And Chick Corea has passed away.
Oh, yes. And so, that was just this year, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was fairly recent. And, yes.
Well, giants. They are certainly musical giants. When the Coln concert came out, you know, I must have know, listen to that 100 times. But with Keith, I call him Keith Jarrett. I think I've got him doing the Goldberg variations on harpsichord. I mean, I was.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's really.
I'll be
there. It was really something. I'll have to go and check that out again. And then the stuff he did with Gary Burton, the vibe stuff, really, mm-hmm. really stellar.
Yeah. And you could tell he had fantastic technique, and you could tell that he was, a trained classical player too. I mean, I never played classical, but I knew he had to have that down.
He definitely
as part of his
has those chops.
Resume. Yeah. Wonderful player.
Now, you were doing...
Yes. Oh, okay. Here's another little story. Because I played a couple of gigs with Charles Lloyd. Do you remember Charles? Charles Lloyd had a band that was very popular. Charles was a wannabe... Coltrane saxophonist, and he had a lot of traction. I mean, he gained some popularity, one of the main things is that he introduced the world to Keith Jarrett on piano, and he had a bass player who was also quite famous. I can't remember his name, but I was playing with him up in Seattle at the Pioneer Bank, it was called. He asked me on the break, he said, let's take a walk. It was in a nice little, reinvigorated neighborhood in downtown Seattle. You know, it was an old neighborhood that had been made nice for the gentry. Okay, so during the walk, he said, You played my man's solo. And I said, what? I did what? Yeah, and Forest Flower was the name of his biggest, closest thing to a hit that he ever had, a song called Forest Flower. He said, yeah, and Forest Flower, you played Keith's piano solo. Well, I never did any such thing. One thing I never did was copy somebody's solo, because I never had the patience to do that. I mean, that's a lot of notes. And a lot of listening and going back and forth. I mean, I learned a lot of songs that way, like some of Chick's songs I learned off the record. But he was wrong about that, and he wouldn't back down from it. From that moment on, I thought, I don't really want to hang out with this guy.
Yes, to be accused,
anyway.
Well, I guess of plagiarism. It's kind of like,
you're
ripping off my dude.
You know, yeah.
Do I understand that you studied political science when you were at the University of Oregon?
You got that right.
Would you have gone something more scholarly if you hadn't taken the musical path?
Well, I did. I graduated with a political science degree. Then I got kidnapped by a band that was in Eugene at the time. Anyway, that was one of my first bands. It wasn't my band. A fraternity brother of mine named Pat Ahern headed that band. He was a bass player. And I had mixed up on my hours, so I finished my senior year, I think 2 or 3 hours short of enough credit to graduate. I didn't graduate with my class. Instead, I got nabbed by this band, and we went down to California and tried to make it as a rock and roll band. And that was kind of a funny experience, because we had four-piece band. There was a guitar player and this wonderful singer, Kathy Smith is her name. And she kind of sounded and looked like Linda Ronstadt, who was who was hot on fire at that time, which may not have stood us in good stead with you know, with the music business at that time, because she really, she was like a, I wouldn't say a Linda Ronstadt wannabe. I'd say Linda Ronstadt was a Kathy Smith wannabe, because Kathy was lovely, and she had, she was such a great singer. We got, we lucked into some management. We did a show at, oh, this place in LA that I'll never think of the name of it right now, but we got, we had a meeting as a result of that performance. It was like, it was almost like an amateur night. And a guy named William McEwen saw us. William McEwen managed Steve Martin.
Ah, sure.
Yeah, okay. So he managed this manager that wanted to manage us. He managed Steve Martin. And there was kind of a whole Orange County mafia of music people that Kathy knew, because she grew up in Orange County. And so Steve wrote kind of an odd presentation that we did for him when we were playing at a place called the Golden Bear in Huntington Beach, California, where we used to play, my band. Eventually we were called Mercy, and we performed this thing that Steve Martin wrote for us, and it was goofy. It was at that time, it was sort of trying to be hip, and I won't even try to explain what it was, but it was not strictly music. It was performance art. And so Steve's manager, Bill McEwen, negotiated a record deal for us with World Pacific Jazz, of all things. I don't know. Our record never even came out. And Kathy went on to, she played at Woodstock. And
Kathy played at Woodstock.
Yeah, Kathy Smith did. With, oh God, man, names are killing me now. Richie Havens. And she toured with Richie Havens.
Wow.
And yeah, and I don't know, Kathy had some, she just had problems with life. And my friend, the bass player, who was actually the leader of the band, Pat Ahern, he just went and saw her, and she hadn't been singing, but she's a beautiful person. And Kathy, I love you, and my heart goes out to you. She quit singing. Anyway, I don't know why I went down this kind of blind alley here, but that was just to say that I you know, I didn't graduate. Then I came back after the experience with that band. We didn't really go anywhere, although we met a lot of people and stuff. And long story short is I finished a degree. I got a degree in education, a master's, and I taught high school for 2 years.
Oh, interesting.
And while I was teaching high school, I was teaching in a little town called Mill City, which is between Bend and Salem, you know, kind of going into the mountains there. And I started, my wife and I at that time, in my second year of teaching at Mill City, we would drive up to Portland, and I started doing some gigs with a drummer, a young drummer, 17, 18 years old, named Ron Steen. And then I started playing some gigs with Jim Pepper, and then I was back in Mill City doing my teaching gig, and I was at home one day, and I got a call from Ron Steen, and Ron laid out all the reasons why I should quit being a school teacher and come up to Portland and play gigs, you know, that I would never be without a gig. He was just so convincing and warm and but insistent on getting me away from teaching and coming up to Portland to realize my karma as a jazz pianist. And so I did that. Huh. I went up and we had gigs and that kind of started my career.
You're listed as a drummer on Jerusalem, right? So you're still playing drums.
Yes. And my apologies to my drummer friends because they might resent me for doing that, taking up a space where a better drummer, you know, might have done. But that's the way I made the demo initially. And I just never felt like changing it, you know, as I added other instruments. Initially, I was the bass player too. I just, you know, got a bass sound on a synthesizer, and then later I got my buddy Dave Capteen to play on it.
Justin Copeland, was that who was on trumpet?
Yeah, Justin Copeland. Justin was a great find for me. I mean, he's got it all. He looks great, and he plays great, and his solos are very sweet, and yeah, he's somebody who has a great future. I first was calling it the Jewish Waltz. I'm Jewish. I was raised to be Jewish. Then I changed it to Jerusalem, and just because it had a quality to it that made me think of the great religions, you know, that are all represented in Jerusalem. Well, the three great religions that I can think of, the Muslim faith, the Jewish faith, and Christianity. And also, when you see some of the shots in the video that goes with my song, there are churches in the background as well as mosques and synagogues and such.
Yes, indeed. And a nice item. The video, that is. Very nicely put together. Whomever did that?
That was Rachel Mortensen. She's a publicist that has been working with me for the last couple of years. And yeah, she did a great job. She just got right to the heart of the feeling of that song.
Thank you.
That was the song Jerusalem by Tom Grant. We will be back with Tom after these additional words from our sponsors. This is The Fix on KXRW.
Programming like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's ADCO, the number one.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by the generous support by David Dansky with David's Toys, buyer and collector of old toy trains, including Lionel, Flyer, Ives, and Marks. He is interested in buying old transportation-related toys as well as toy trains from the late 1800s to the 1960s. David offers appraisals for fellow toy train lovers as well. David's Toys can be reached at 360-576-1602. That's 360-576-1602.
Let's return to my conversation with Tom Grant. You are listening to The Fix on KXRW. In your biography, it says that you played The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
And what was that, like?
I was like, I was intensely frightened, and I never really got over it. See, what was the deal? They would have bands on from time to time. This is, or they would have somebody who would sit in with their band. Who is the band leader? It was a famous guy, a trumpet player, I think. I'm not sure who.
Not Doc Severinsen.
We should. No, it wasn't. I don't think it was Doc Severinsen. But that would be worth looking up. But I was so, I was just scared crazy. I was scared into being stunned. And I was, I think I just played one song with them when they opened the show. And then they introduced me. And I look like, the classic deer in the headlights when they got a shot of me. But, that was about it. I don't think I was interviewed on camera. I was just kind of jammed with the band.
Well, pretty high profile.
And they were, that was high profile. But I can't say that I was anything but I look like the deer in the headlights. I'm telling you.
Well, it looks great on the resume, I'll tell you.
It does. It looks a lot better than the way I looked that night, or sounded, for that matter.
Let's take this opportunity to mention a couple of places where you can be found, and I think Nicoletta's Table. That looks like a steady Tuesday gig. I think you're there through the rest of the year anyway. So pretty nice space.
Yeah, we're through. Yeah, it is really nice. And they have wonderful food. And the most exciting thing is, I don't know if by the time you're ready to run this by the public, I hope we have the new piano that we've kind of made a deal with my friends at Classic Pianos of Portland. I am a Yamaha artist, and I believe that they're going to put a new piano in, a Yamaha Avant Grand, it's called. And they're great pianos. They look like a tiny version of a grand piano, and it sounds like, a 25-foot piano or something. It is so cool that they're willing to, get this new piano. It is electric, but it sounds so wonderfully acoustic. They have sampled like the top of the line pianos in their line. I'm talking about the Yamaha company. But Nicoletta's Table is a really sweet spot. It's right on State Street. It's kind of, it's in a little shopping mall that you you could drive past and easily not see. It's kind of raised up above State Street, down toward the south end of the street. And they have really wonderful food there and kind of a young staff. And it's a really cool place. And so I hope we can go beyond the end of the year. We'll see. We'll see what happens. So, I've also been playing at a new place. Now, Nicoletta's has been there for some time, but not a whole long time. I don't know exactly how long. But there's a new place that we've just kind of opened. And I'm saying we, referring to people like me and Ron Steen, and a singer named Billy Edson, who has been on the scene for a while, and she's also really kind of a great business head on her, and she's helping stock the place. It's called The Underground. It's in the Monarch Hotel. It's right on 205 in Clackamas.
So in the world of Clackamas.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And they've got a nice little sound system and a piano, and a grand piano. I don't want to talk anymore about brand names if we can avoid that. And it's really a nice place. It just has a vibe to it that's it's almost magical, so I'm playing there several times a month, and then she and sometimes Billy sings with me, and Ron plays there with different bass players and piano players, and it's a cool scene. It's there's actually three names to this operation. It's in the Monarch Hotel. The restaurant part is called De Fuego or Del Fuego, and the downstairs section is called the Underground. And just watch for me and others. The shows are usually 6 to 9, and that's going to be a new happening music place in the
excellent
greater Portland area.
And I happen to know how to watch for you, and that is by going to TomGrant.com. When in doubt, visit the website.
Yes. Oh, that. Yeah, that's, once again, Rachel Mortensen keeps me honest and keeps me in the loop as far as social media goes. So, yeah, TomGrant.com. I was lucky enough to get that domain, and I've had that since, since the 1990s.
Oh.
Yeah. You can always find my schedule there.
The last thing I wanted to ask, Wichitaito, you had mentioned a love-hate relationship. Jim Pepper wrote that, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. And I worked with him a lot, too. Matter of fact, I'm on one of his albums.
Oh, you are.
But, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, just I'm wondering what in the world that Pepper's, was like.
What, playing with Jim?
Playing with him. Well, when you described it, it made me think that there must have been some adventures.
I did go to New York with him to record this one album called Pepper's Powwow. And he recorded Wichitaito on that album. But that was, I think, the third time that he had done a version of Wichitaito. And since then, he's done many, many more. And other acts, including myself, have recorded that song. It's just a very listenable song. And I'm thinking about, on one of my live stream shows, doing a little piano lesson to teach people how to play that, because people love that song, and it
yes.
does have a kind of a magic, and it's a simple song to play on the piano and sing at the same time. It'll take a little practice depending on how what your skill level is and how much experience you have at the keyboard. But I'm thinking of devoting one of my live stream shows to show people how to play Wichy Taito so you don't have to bother me about it.
Well,
no, I love the song. Let me just say this. That song has a magic that I still respond to. Matter of fact, it affected us and my band so deeply, like that. And Dan Ballmer and I used to talk about this. Dan Ballmer was my guitar player for years. What is it about the key of D, Wichy Taito is in D, that has such a magic? And then Dan wrote a couple of songs. If You Were My Girl, I think is in D. What's the other one? In a Special Way. A Special Way is in D. And then I wrote the Morning Show. That's in D. And we've both written songs in the key of D because it has kind of jazz. People don't write jazz songs in D, for one thing. And I think Pepper was very clever with this song, maybe without even trying. And I know it was a joint effort between Pepper and the guitar player from Seattle. But I'm going to try to teach people how to play it at the piano and sing it at the same time. Geez, Pepper recorded probably 30 versions of it. I recorded at least three that I can think of. I do like the one on the Jazz Cat record, which is just called Tom Grant. That's nice. But I think I even like better the one that was on Reprise. Reprise was a reprise of some of my better liked songs over the years. So there's a version of Wichy Taito, and I think I even do the Wichy Taito chant in front of it. But check that one out.
I was really looking forward to this. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited to have had this opportunity to speak with you. I am an avid admirer, and I think
you're playing
as well.
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it.
Feel glad I'm not dead. Wichy Taito, Mira, Oralico, Oralico.
KXRW.FM Vancouver Radio is volunteer-powered and community-supported. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a KXRW monthly member today. Find out how by going to KXRW.FM. One-time donations are always welcome as well. Thank you so much for listening. For any and all things Tom Grant, visit TomGrant.com. This is Bill Haas speaking for The Fix on KXRW.